This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Lifting the Lid with Sam and Duncan.
Every week, we go on a deep dive to better understand jobs and industries that we think we know, but really we don't. This week, Lifting the Lid, we're talking to a producer about the behind the scenes of television. Mike Worsley, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. How are you guys?
Doing well, sir.
You're a TV producer. Can you help us understand the difference between a producer and an executive producer?
Well, quite a lot of money, number one. but no, I think generally, you know, an exec producer is sort of deemed the person who actually goes out and gets the funding and oversees the project and, you know, gets everything up and running. And a producer is more sort of down on the ground making stuff happen behind the scenes. So, you know, the exec is responsible for everybody on that production from the top down. So they'll, like, deal with the network or the client or whatever, you know, wherever the money's coming from and manage that overall. Whereas the producer is more sort of a couple of rungs down the ladder, a couple of pay grades down, but tends to probably work the hardest, I'd say.
Okay, so I've already got those two back to front. That's My first misconception has been corrected. What other misconceptions might I have about TV production?
That it's glamorous. I think a lot of people see TV and they go, gosh, it looks so much fun. That looks like it's amazing. I can tell you it can be the most hideous thing to do as well. I mean, I have done so many shows where you work until like 3 a.m. rigging cameras for a hidden camera stunt the next day. And you are getting up at 6 a.m. to carry on filming that stunt because no one can see that you're there. I mean, we did one example. We did a show called Office Junkie about sort of 15 years ago in the UK. And it was an early sort of hidden camera prank show where we'd get two people in an open plan office to play jokes on each other all day. And none of the other office staff knew that they were getting filmed, that this was like a competition. So everyone was getting pranked, essentially. But in order to do that, we'd have to go into the offices the night before, rig cameras, and then get in there before the staff showed up in the morning. So we'd often be put in like a broom cupboard, and you had cameramen having to go to the loo in like bins, you know what I mean? Like, it's really not, you're stuck there for 10 hours. It's really not that pleasant. And I probably ate more sausage rolls than I could ever imagine, just sort of trying to keep ourselves going for 10 hours until we could do the reveal. So yeah, there's a lot of not unglamorous elements TV. But then, you know, there's also a lot of fun elements too. I mean, yes, you do get to meet a lot of wonderful celebrities who pretend, you know, but it can also sort of break your illusion of who these people are. You know, you meet some of your idols and go, oh, actually, they're not as nice as I thought. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's also not as illustrious in terms of money. I think a lot of people think there's so much money in TV, and actually, as the years go on, the budgets get smaller and smaller, so you really have to be quite clever about how you make stuff. I mean, I always say, you know, a Kylie Spectacular on a Danny Burke is what we aim for.
So, Mike, you mentioned hidden camera gotcha shows, and I know that you've worked on a number of those. But I've always wondered, you obviously want to film it without people knowing and get the reactions right, but
correct,
then I assume you have to get permission from them afterwards.
You do, and that's not always easy, I have to say. I've had a few people run off at me in the street and get very angry. I mean, I've done various hidden camera shows. Some of them are genuinely done to give someone an amazing surprise. Their families work really hard with us behind the scenes to make happen. But, you know, usually the way you go about it is we put casting calls out to find people who want to nominate someone to be pranked. So we very rarely just do it on somebody because we need the guarantee that at least that they think they might sign. So, you know, if I'm my friend, I know what their personality is like. I kind of figure that if they are going to be pranked in some way, that I probably would imagine they'd be happy for it to be shown on TV. But that's not always the case. Some people do get it very, very wrong. We've had quite a few little incidents where people have been very angry with us. But, you know, and eventually they saw the fun side of it. But, yeah, it's getting those release forms can be tricky. And a lot of people think these hidden camera things are staged, and I have to say they're not. I mean, you may plant actors in and around the scene. So, like, if we're doing a prank in a pub, just in order to control the environment to make sure that it's safe if we're doing something big, maybe even an explosion, that we know that everyone in the scene is on our side. The only person that has no idea what's going on is the person we're pranking, and that's always genuine, always genuine.
So you said that you've done some of the ones where you do like a big experience. So I'm guessing it's like a big positive experience knowing that there's going to be a reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Have you had a moment where you're like, okay, this is why I got into producing, this is exactly the kind of response I've wanted. And, you know, like you end up in tears at the end of it.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I mean, I suppose I've worked on a show in England called Saturday Night Takeaway for 7 years, which was probably the greatest feel-good entertainment show ever. I mean, it was definitely a career highlight doing that show for so many years. And we were in charge of the audience surprises. And we'd find people, they were always really deserving of the reason why we did this surprise. So you get some amazing mums who are just so busy and they work so hard, or, you know, and all they want is a holiday. And we would do the most audacious stunt where we would maybe hide, you know, Robbie Williams in their house for a day without them knowing, you know, the amazing things like that. So not only do they get to meet their idol, they actually get to go on a lovely holiday for once. Because a lot of our viewers, you know, they came from places that weren't the richest parts of the country. You know, they weren't able to just go off on a family holiday with, you know, four kids and the mum and dad. You know, so we were able to do that for people that we felt were really deserving. And it's a very extensive casting process to find these people. But there'd be some moments where you do have tears rolling down your eyes. You know, the greatest proposal of all time, I believe, we pulled out on TV. And it was, you know, it was wonderful to watch this guy who was such a drip. I mean, he was really like the sweetest guy, but he was such a drip. And his girlfriend had nominated him to be pranked because she thought he deserved to get his comeuppance, really. She thought he was a bit of a naff boyfriend. But actually, we turned it on her. And he went through hoops to give her the greatest proposal of all time. In fact, we put him on lots of other shows and pre-recorded him on I'm a Celeb in Australia. At the set there, we sent him to do a dive off the big diving board on Splash to prove he was sporty. And we put him on Dancing on Ice in the UK, which was this amazing, you know, ice dancing show to prove that he was romantic. And he just did all these things for weeks training behind the scenes. And she was so blown away by the level of effort that we had made as a production, and also that her partner had made, you know, this really useless guy who just didn't ever do anything romantic for us. And it was fantastic. And I remember the host, we went to an ad break and the host said, "That's it, we're done, we peaked." You know, it was wonderful. So it is lovely to do that. For sure. I mean, there's, you know, that's the beautiful side of what we can do in this industry is reward people and give people back, you know, a little bit of something that we, you know, and work with great people that want to give holidays away or what, you know, cars away and all that kind of stuff. It does change people's lives for sure.
Mark, I think of reality TV because it's so big at the moment and the application process that you've got to go through to get on the show. And I imagine there's so many shows that get thousands of applications. How is it possible to get through all of those and find the gold from among the rough?
Well, it's a very extensive process, and you often have quite a lot of people doing it, certainly in the beginning. I mean, I've run whole casting teams where, you know, we've had upwards of like 10 to 15 people going through thousands of applications. But you sort of, you develop an instinct for what works. I mean, often, you know, applications, first of all, if you're going to fill out a long application, don't just answer each question with two words, because if you're going to do that, then it obviously means you're probably not even going to give us one word on camera. So, you know, we're very like, you know, people really go to an effort with their applications and also their application videos, because this day and age, everyone can make video content on their phones and everyone does to a certain degree. So we look out for who the personalities are. So you can watch people's videos on these application forms straight away, because everything's done digitally these days as well. It's an extensive process, but as soon as you find someone, you're like, oh, they're great. There's a bit of magic there, or there's a bit of personality there that we think would work on TV. And when you're casting, you kind of have to have that foresight of, oh, this person's a really great application. This person's got a really great video, but can I imagine them coping on the show? Can I imagine them being good TV? And if you think, yes, I can actually, I can see this person doing really well, then you put them into a shortlist. You know, and it is extensive, it is hard, but also you kind of know what you're looking for. You know, if you've had particular types of characters on a previous season, you don't really want to repeat that because it looks like you're trying to replace that person with somebody new. You want to find something brand new, something unique, you know. So you kind of, in the back of your mind, you're always thinking about what those things are. But yeah, it is hard, but you do get through them all. And, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes I think, my God, I just, you know, I've read so many forms, they all sort of roll into one, but people do stick out for the right reasons, and they're the ones that end up going on these shows.
Okay, so I know that Sam is very keen to find himself on Survivor. If you were to give him a tip for filling in the application, what kind of things would he need to put on there to make him a lock?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I think he would have to be as open and honest as possible and not try to be funny, not try to be outrageous. People need to be themselves. A lot of people try and put on a persona in their forms. They try and give away, they do a video with them instead of a character. And unfortunately, that doesn't resonate with us because we know that after a couple of days on set, that's just going to be, that facade's going to end and they won't be able to continue it on. Mm. Naturally, they can't manage that. And the real them comes through. And often that isn't quite what the show needs or what, or they're not comfortable being themselves. So just be yourself. If you're not comfortable being your total self, and expose yourself, you know, in any way, telling your funny stories or even your worst stories, or, you know, giving us your full personality and all its capacity, then it's not worth applying. So I think if he's going to fill out a form for Survivor and fill out, you know, or even Big Brother or The Bachelor, you know, and he's going to pretend to be someone who's not, then that's going to fail on him. So yeah, he needs to be open and honest.
I'll pass on The Bachelor. I'm a happily married man, but thank you. That's good advice.
I mean, you never know, right?
Mike, I want you to ruin TV for us. Ruin TV and movies. Tell us some of the tricks that you use on set to make something look real.
Well, I mean, having made a lot of fake things in our career, through to, you know, I've never seen so much peanut butter and chocolate powder used to make fake, you know, toilet. Fake poo, which we used to prank people with on a particular show called Balls of Steel. One of the greatest things that I still to this day love is how you make things steam, because I've done shoots where we need food to get really hot all the time, and you're doing several takes, and you're like, well, you know, this food's got to be eaten, the cast's got to take a bite of it, whatever, but it needs to look hot. And I always wondered how they did it, and until I shot it, and I was shown by an art director. They basically take tampons and soak them in water so they really expand beyond normal capacity, I'd say. Otherwise, that would be very frightening. And they pop them in the microwave and they put them in there for a few seconds, steam them, and they just let off steam. Like, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. So these tampons are just laid under a roast chicken, and the roast chicken just steams for about an hour. It's fantastic.
So you get as many photos and videos as you need of that roast chicken looking piping hot.
Absolutely. If you watch those commercials, you know, you see your Coles ad and they got hot roast chicken, you know that somewhere in that plate there is a steaming tampon.
Wow.
Goodness, that's ruined a lot of chicken dinners.
But anyway.
Okay, what's the most difficult problem that you've had to solve, or is it usually kind of wardrobe malfunctions that give you the most grief?
I think the difficult problems are logistics. I mean, honestly, I suppose I've done all sorts of TV, from live entertainment shows where you're sort of trying to cut stuff and bits of scripts because you're running behind live on air, and, you know, you're constantly just on that treadmill trying to keep the show going, but also thinking of what you can lose to keep it to time. So there's all those little problems. But I think logistics is definitely the hardest thing. People don't realise how much work goes into a production. And I think, you know, in terms of us, we've had so many shoots where, you know, the weather's got us. You know, and that's the biggest thing as well. You know, it's trying to make your shoots happen when there's so many elements that are against you. But, I mean, as we always do, you just stack the odds in your favour, you know, make the best you can of it. But nothing ever goes totally to plan. Mm. So that's also the fun of it as well. I'm sure you've had many shows where things haven't gone quite to plan. Mm.
I quite enjoy when the show goes off the rails because it goes to interesting places.
I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, all those things where they say, you know, never work with kids or never work with pets and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I can tell you, working with animals and children can be a blessing and a curse. We've actually had a monkey once at the office who got really upset with his handler and just started literally throwing his poo everywhere all over everyone's computers. And that was an interesting cleaning job. You know, things like that happen. And donkeys are horrendous. Goats are horrendous. No one tells you that goats, all they do is just poo.
Oh, mate.
Wherever you are. So, you know, I've had goats. Yeah, we were doing a fake sacrifice in someone's garden for a hidden camera prank once, and this goat was just an absolute nightmare. So I was like, who gets to say they've done that? But it's just, yeah, goats are not fun.
Mike, is it hard to get into the entertainment industry? Because I know that it's often it's you got to do a lot of hustling to get in, your foot in the door, right?
You do. I mean, look, I suppose these days it's a lot easier than what it was when I started. I mean, I started TV full-time 18 years ago. And I did it. I was quite audacious. The way I got into the industry was I went to a live recording of a breakfast TV show in London, which I knew about, and I just basically walked backstage and someone stopped me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I want a job." And I was this precocious 18-year-old who always knew he wanted to work in TV. And she gave me her email address, and I emailed her every day for 6 weeks until she called me and said, are you ever going to stop emailing me? And I said, no, until you give me a job. And then she gave me a job when I didn't show up on the first day because it was a breakfast show and I didn't wake up on time. So that was a disaster. But then she actually gave me a second chance. And I worked in that company for 5 years, and here I am now, 18 years later. And, you know, there's no real right or wrong way to get into the industry. I think you just have to be really confident in what you want to do. I think you really have to believe that you can do it. But also, you just have to hit everyone up that you can. I mean, honestly, this industry moves so fast. People have forgotten within a second. Mm. There's so many people nowadays that want to make content, and TV's changing. I mean, when I got into it 18 years ago, there was no social media, you know, and you literally, you know, there was no way of reaching out to people online, particularly, you know, forums like LinkedIn didn't exist. So, you know, you literally had to go to the company, to the building, you know, knock on doors, literally do that, which is what I did. And I think now you can just do it, you know, you can get hold of people on Instagram, LinkedIn, and get online. But, you know, there's more content being made by a lot more places. I mean, even I run my own company, Creating Cast, as a way of making additional content outside of, you know, big TV shows to give myself more breadth. And I think, you know, there are loads of producers out there making content. I think get online, see what's being done. And if people really want to get into the industry, they'll find a way. But you just have to be confident. And I'm also terrible because I dropped out of university to take a full-time job in TV. I just started my degree. And I said, you know, I've got to do this degree for 3 years and then I'm still going to have to be a runner. So I could be a runner now. So why don't I just start now? And I learned my craft on the job rather than being taught the sort of tenuous version of it at university. So I'm not the best advocate of going for higher education, but it hasn't stopped me having a great, illustrious, successful, sometimes crazy career. You know, and I do believe that if you really want it, you'll get it. You just have to really throw yourself in there and prove to people that you got what it takes. Because it's not an easy industry, as you guys probably know. And, you know, in radio, it's not an easy industry to do. It's hard work and it's competitive. But if you're creative and you've got the right attitude about it, I believe you can make it. You just got to be creative, have good ideas, and be nice to people.
Okay, so Mike, let's get a little bit fun here. Blue sky. You have any opportunity to work on your dream show with an unlimited budget? What is it that you want to work on?
Well, I actually have a dream show that I am trying to pitch, and I'm trying to get it away. And it's basically, I would love nothing more than to travel the world and do a version of this show in every country where you just reward the heroes of your community in the most amazing stunts with amazing prizes and really, really reward people that deserve it and ram it full of all my favorite celebrities. I mean, that's the dream for any producer, I think, is to get a show commissioned and get it sold all around the world. Having said that, I also would... I'm absolutely a massive Mariah Carey fan, and she had the worst reality show ever called Mariah's World, and it never made it past season two. But if I could pick it up and take season two, I'd probably do a much better job of it with her. So yeah, Mariah's World season two would be the other one for that. I know a lot of people will roll their eyes, but...
Well, we know that Mariah's a big fan of this show, so if you're listening, Mariah, Mike's available.
Oh, now. Yeah, Mariah, I know she's listening right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I've tried to get her attention many times, but, yeah, we'll see.
Mike, incredible, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to share the ins and outs of the industry, buddy. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.